For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to another episode of Tailgate Till May. I'm your host, Stephen Gorgie, and I'm joined for another episode after a long weekend by Brian Kaufman. You can probably hear it in my voice. It was a long weekend, but a fun weekend. Today, we are diving into week two of the college football season and all the aftermath. But first, a reminder, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. Apple, Spotify, Google, you name it. And if you like the show, we'd love if you leave us a five-star review. So let's get into week two. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. It was fun. It was fun to be back at a sports bar for a college football Saturday. Week two never has sort of the most exciting slate on paper, but it rarely lets us down. And this week was no exception. So it was real fun to be out and about with the crowds and watching games. So I'm feeling good about it.
I was complaining a little bit in week zero about how I felt like we limped into the college football season, but I felt like yesterday was a moment I hadn't experienced in a very long time. And part of that is we've had a couple football seasons since the COVID pandemic started where I wasn't really going out to watch games out and about. But there was several moments yesterday where we were in not necessarily what you think of as like the mecca of college football, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I think we saw more Eagles jerseys yesterday than any college football team. But there was a certain point in that Texas-Alabama game where we had been a few of the folks sitting at the bar intently watching the game, but a crowd started to build. Mm-hmm. And then before you knew it, there was 30 people crowding around for that last Alabama drive and ultimately their win. And then another moment like that happened later at another bar, which actually didn't have the best TV setup, where I saw people taking out their phones to check out Marshall Notre Dame. And that's the moments that I miss so much and I think are so cool about college football. But I felt like we haven't had that in so long. Twitter can feel like that to some extent, but I don't think there's any substitute for when you see it actually happen in person.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. And it's just so much fun. We were sitting there having some beers, having some chicken wings. It felt like how a college football Saturday should feel. And it was a good one. There were some upsets, weren't there?
There sure were. So I'll play a little dealer's choice here, Brian. There's a few things we can start with. Do you want to start with the big upsets of the day? Texas A&M losing to App State and Notre Dame losing to Marshall? Or what was supposed to be the game of the day that I just dismissed outright and said I wasn't interested in, but turned out to be an instant classic? Which one are you going with?
Let's talk about the upsets. Let's talk about the fun belt.
The fun belt, the conference of champions, the fun belt coming up with two huge wins on this day. And Brian, you know, I'm a pretty simple man. I like sports. I like chicken wings. I'm not complicated. One of the things I also really like, don't like any other reality TV, but I like the Jersey Shore. The first season of the Jersey Shore, I would put on the Mount Rushmore of reality TV. So when these games were happening, all I could think of was telling Notre Dame what Situation told Sammy Sweetheart in season one when she refused to take the dishes over to the plate after he cooked a meal. You're excluded. You're excluded from chicken cutlet night. You're excluded from ravioli night. And that's exactly what Texas A&M and Notre Dame are. Excluded from the college football playoff. They're excluded. They're excluded. They're excluded. And with good reason. Notre Dame 0-2 now. Texas A&M drops to 1-1, both losing to Sun Belt teams on their home field. Simply unexcusable. As much as I love the Sun Belt, that is a national championship relevance ruiner for the season for both.
100%. And a tip of the cap to you, because I feel like when we were talking about, specifically with Texas A&M, right? And I don't think either of us were ready to be like, that's an SEC contender, a national title contender. Like, it feels like the media, in air quotes, has been trying to do for a minute now. But you specifically pointed out, like, hey, I don't know that they've figured out this quarterback problem. And they might have one of the best defenses in the country, but like, they can't until you figure that out and establish something on offense, you're not going to be able to do anything. Well, hello, Haynes King, 13 of 20 for 97 yards passing. He is an athletic guy. He had a 30-yard run in a pivotal moment, and he isn't totally helpless out there. But let me just repeat myself. 13 of 20 for 97 yards. App had 22 first downs to Texas A&M's 9. App had the ball for over 41 minutes time of possession. Texas A&M had it for 18. They didn't just win this game. They bullied them. They went into College Station and they knocked them around. And I thought it was really interesting because on the last, I believe it was Cameron Peoples, the long run to seal it, Texas A&M had a shot at him in the flat and they missed him, just a missed tackle. And it was sort of indicative of the whole thing. Texas A&M's supposed to be this big, bad defensive team and couldn't make the tackle when they needed to. And man, I just not impressed. And yeah, you're excluded from any sort of conversation with a chat like that. And I know we're gonna get ahead to week three, but honestly, a little bit surprised that they're laying as many points as they are against Miami next week. I believe I saw it as a 6-point favorite, and maybe it's more of an indictment on Miami than anything. But anyway, yeah, kudos to App. You know, they left it all on the field in week one against UNC, scored 60+, and you could have seen a world where they came out a bit flat. And they certainly weren't world beaters on offense or anything like that, but they did what they had to do to get it done.
Well, and I got to give you credit too, Brian, because last week on the show, you immediately said, I like App State in the points. And on the preview show, I kind of went the other direction. I said, I can't find it at -9.5 in the first half, but I just like App State to come out a little bit flat, Texas A&M to just put them away early because they did have that showdown with Miami the following week. And that's not what happened at all. There was nothing flat about that performance by the Mountaineers. They dominated them on the lines, in the trenches, 181 yards on the ground. Cameron Peoples, 112 yards. That's not supposed to happen. And I know we were a little hard. I've been hard on Chase Brice throughout. I said I wanted to take some shots. I will say one of my bets preseason was Marshall to win the Sun Belt, which I like even more now. But I said I wanted to take some shots against App, and he did not have the greatest game today or yesterday. But he did the things that mattered. He was only 15 of 30, 134 yards, but didn't turn the ball over. Made the plays that he needed to make. And it would be really easy for him to get down after missing that 2-point conversion last week. But it's a team game, and I think he did just enough. I want to ask you, now that App State has won this game, are they the favorite for the Group of Five New Year's Six Bowl?
It's interesting. We were talking about it over text that like a lot of the teams, at least we picked in a wins pool to compete for their conference championships, have taken losses in some form or another. I mean, they're as good a bet as any, right? In my opinion, like to come out and play like that and pull out a win in a really, really hostile environment. I think there's a couple of teams you still have to put in there. Like, I still think, an American team could make a push for it if Houston still does what we expect them to do in the AAC. That was a tough loss for them too over the weekend, but yeah, they're right there. They're right there. I mean, they certainly have played their way into it, and you wouldn't have done that. After the North Carolina game, it was like, oh, okay, they'll be competitive. They can hang with teams. This does kind of put them in a little bit of a different light. And so obviously that win's going to look extremely good on on the resume throughout the season. I guess I would say yes, as good as any at this point, two games in.
I'll be really interested to see what the updated Sun Belt future odds are. Haven't been able to find any yet today, but I'm curious how that shakes out, because Georgia State is a team that has now taken two losses in back-to-back week to Power 5 teams in South Carolina and North Carolina, but I think they're still a really good Sun Belt team. I think their defense is really good, and they have just as good a shot as anybody to take down some of these powers. That Sun Belt East is just ridiculous right now. So I'm curious to see how inflated App's odds are from that A&M win. It's a great win, but college football, you got to bring it week in and week out. And winning this game doesn't preclude them from dropping one or two in the Sun Belt, because there's really good teams in the Sun Belt, including Marshall, who went on the road to South Bend and took down the Irish a week after everybody, including ourselves included, especially me, said, you have to pay attention to Notre Dame now. I put my stake in the ground, as our friend Ben loves when I say, I put my stake in the ground and I said, Notre Dame is now a team I think we need to pay attention to now. And after yesterday, we don't. Simple as that. They are not a team that we need to care about, pay attention to, unless they start ripping off of four games in a row or something along those lines. I mean, college football teams aren't static, but what I saw over those first 2 weeks, that is an offense that just does not have the firepower to compete on the national stage right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, is it as simple as just, like, they're not impressive when they have the ball on the offensive side? I'd be interested to hear on, like, what the, you know, two bullet point takeaway is on why they weren't able to get it done this weekend.
I think, I mean, it's really easy to just go back to quarterback, but I think sometimes that is the answer. And Tyler Buchner just has not produced at the level of even what Jack Cohn did for them last year that was able to make them successful. And I think a lot of people, I talked about it a bit Friday, and I even talked about it with Kyle Kelly when we did our Notre Dame preview a few weeks back, is that Brian Kelly was really good at getting these games done. He would win these games even if we were close. And Kyle made the point that even, you know, Jack Cohn won games for this team. They found ways to win games. And I just don't think Tyler Buchner is giving them enough right now. I was really impressed with Marshall's defense. That pick they had towards the end of the game that kind of sealed it, I felt like they just looked like such a physical, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but that looked like an SEC defense with how physical their defensive backs were, where they out-athletic, whoever made that pick was just more athletic than the Notre Dame receiver, and he was more physical, and he made a big play. I think the other thing, too, is they need a receiver to emerge outside of Meyer. I mean, they don't have threats that they need to compete at the level that they want to compete at. You got to have more than just one guy who can get it done. So for me, I think that's the biggest thing. I think you'll continue to see their defense be passable and good, but at some point you got to score.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. That was quite a weekend for the conference, though, I will say. I mean, totally changed the picture for those two teams, Texas A&M and Notre Dame. Unexpected. And like I said, it's like week two never looks good on paper, but we have to stop acting surprised when it gives us results like this, because it's like, it's going to happen. It sneaks up on people. People look ahead, and this is two instances, I would say, that fits the bill for sure.
So in the Sun Belt this year, Marshall has beaten Notre Dame, App State has beaten Texas A&M, Old Dominion has beaten Virginia Tech, and Georgia Southern has beaten Nebraska, which directly led to Scott Frost's firing, which we'll get to certainly at some point here a little bit later. But that, I mean, that is a bellwether year already 2 weeks in for the Sun Belt. And I think I asked the question in one of our preview shows, I think our G5 preview show, is the Sun Belt now the best G5 conference? And I mean, I think it's making a very strong case.
Yeah. It must have listened when I was hesitant to say yes, because they are playing their way into an obvious yes there.
All right, well, let's move on, Brian, to another game that wasn't quite an upset, but a near upset. It's funny, Alabama was favored by more against Texas on the road than A&M was against App State at home.
Wow. Yeah.
And it ended up being a really close game, though. It was a game where Texas, to their credit, stuck around the whole game. They left a lot of points on the board. I thought that whole safety targeting situation, I think, is something that Texas fans can be pretty upset about. They did at least kind of get the call right, where they took the targeting off the board. Apparently, you're not even able to review roughing the passer, but they kind of did anyway and took that off the board, which I'm totally fine with because that was the right call. But I just can't believe that and didn't end up being a safety. I think the ball actually did hit somebody in the helmet, which is why it didn't end up being intentional grounding. But I mean, if you're Texas, you've got to feel like you had Bryce Young down. Like, that's 2 points that would have won you the game. There was a few times they missed a field goal. They settled for some threes instead of sevens. But all in all, a really good fight by Texas, especially without their starting quarterback Quinn Ewers for most of the game. How do you feel about Texas as the proud owner of Texas in a college football wins pool that we're in? How are you feeling about the Longhorns moving forward?
I got to be honest with you, and I think I said this to you in person, and I definitely said it last week when I was like, okay, I'm trying really hard not to overreact to certain things. I don't necessarily feel a ton different about Texas. Like, I don't now see them as a Big 12 favorite any more than, yes, as the proud owner in the wins pool. They have a lot of talent. I could daydream about them being competitive. That's still about where I am. I mentioned last week that I was really nervous for them to play UTSA. That's upcoming this weekend. Still nervous about it. So, and particularly with Ewers out, I think they said 4 to 6 weeks for him. So hopefully he gets back soon because he was playing well. He was fun to watch. It doesn't change a ton for me. And I think, like, if you listen to a lot of other people, they might say yes, but I think you're just a little bit of a prisoner of the moment in that instance where they were at home, big game, do it for coach who just was the offensive coordinator over there, whatever it is. They got up for it, probably should have won, didn't, and that's that, right? I honestly, Stephen, I think if Bama misses that field goal and Texas won, I might be a little more positive, but it's the same thing to me because you're playing with Hudson Card. I think I turned to you a few times and I was like, we've seen the Hudson Card show. Like I've seen it. The reason for excitement this year for Texas was Quinn Ewers. I said it in the preview show. It was like, this guy was a 1.0 recruit. There's not that many people who have been rated as highly as a recruit ever as Quinn Ewers. And so there's something you could buy into that. I can't buy into Hudson Card going unbeaten in the next 4 to 6 weeks. I think it's, you know, hoping to hold on. And that's sort of where I'm at. I think Texas can win 8 or 9 games and that would be a successful season. I don't suddenly think, oh, they hung with Bama. They're a 10 win team. It's not like that for me.
Brian, I'm terrified of their next 2 games.
Yeah.
UTSA at home and at Texas Tech.
Yep.
That's terrifying. And I think that will really be what we need to watch and see. Is this different for Texas? Because we've seen Texas compete and even beat against high tier, high level competition. If you go back to 2018, after dropping the opener to Maryland, they beat USC and they beat Oklahoma. Then they dropped 2 to Oklahoma State and West Virginia. So it's like we've seen this story before. I want to see Texas go out and go 7-1. In conference. Show me that you can do this week after week after week, because anybody can do it 1 week. That's kind of the beauty of college football. And that's what Texas has done. They've done it 1 week plenty of time. But do you have the drive, the discipline, the focus, whatever it may be that's been holding them back to go out and say, we're going to treat this game against TCU the same way we're treating a game against Alabama? We're going to treat this game against Texas Tech the same way we treat Red River. And if they can do that, then I will be very impressed and I will change my tune. But I am still very much in wait and see mode. So I think reason to be cautiously optimistic, but they got to prove it. I think as simple as that.
I agree with you. They do deserve some kudos. I mean, on defense, like that Alabama offense, I think we both sort of expected them to have their way to a certain extent. There was a point in this game, I believe it was the last 3 drives of the first half, the first 3 drives of the second half were punts. They punted 6 straight possessions. Alabama did. So I like that part is actually more impressive. Like if you had told me that Texas kept it close and lost a tight one, I would have thought it was a little more shootout feel to it than like kind of sloppy 20-19 like we saw. And so I think, like, if you're looking for reason to buy in, if you're a Texas fan or a casual observer looking for some value, like I think you can find it there in their defensive performance. But I think you make a perfect point. Can they do this regularly? And there's no sleep for the weary, right? No rest for the weary. UTSA coming up this weekend, like you said, Texas Tech, and a week later after what should be a win against West Virginia, Red River. So it's not going to be easy, and I sort of have the same expectations for the Longhorns going forward.
Now, Brian, on the flip side, I'm a little scared about Alabama's receivers because we kind of saw that rear its head, their lack of receiver depth in the national championship game last year. And I felt like it kind of showed again on Saturday when your running back, Jahmyr Gibbs, is leading the team in receiving with 9 receptions for 74 yards. I don't think that's what you want. They're so used to having a first round, potentially Heisman candidate at receiver that I feel like they're starting to feel the impact of that a little bit. And I was just struck. Now, granted, we were at a bar. We didn't have the sounds on. Maybe a few beverages were consumed. But the feeling I got every time I watched their offense was like they're throwing it within a couple yards of the line of scrimmage. And I think that has to be partly on the receivers, not able to get separation, not able to make the plays they need. And they're so used to having talented receivers that I think that offense doesn't quite look the same now. Now, having said that, I am not ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater or anything like that. I mean, I think it's still a national championship contending team. But like, yeah, I mean, I think there's some reason to be concerned. I think everybody has reasons to be concerned to some extent. And this has made me think that maybe Alabama is a tad more normal than we thought to start the year. Maybe Ohio State's a tad more normal than we thought to start the year. I think sometimes in the offseason, we convince ourselves so much like these teams are infallible. These teams are infallible. They're so good. They have so many 5-stars. They can't lose. But sometimes when you get on the field, you got to make plays, and they had a little trouble making plays. But at the same time, it does remind me a little bit of a game last year they had early in the season against Florida, where, quite frankly, I thought they should have lost that game in the Swamp, and we know how things went the rest of the year. Alabama figured it out because football teams are not static entities, and it's the coaching staffs who can make adjustments, figure it out as the season goes on, that ultimately produce the best teams. And there is nobody in college football better than Nick Saban at that. So I think for me, I want to monitor this situation, but I wouldn't say I'm overly concerned at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And you mentioned Gibbs leaded them in receiving, but I think, and I'm working on the assumption you meant receiving yards, which is true, but I think looking at receptions too is such an interesting way to look at this because he caught the ball 9 times. And I think that speaks to what you're saying, right? No other receiver. They spread the love a bit, but no other receiver had more than 4. And so it's like, it's nice to have a running back who's a threat in the pass game. That's not, I think I can openly say, Alabama's intent with how their offense is supposed to go. And so I think that's a really good point. And I'm sitting here looking at the names on the receiving list, and you don't have the Devontae Smith. You don't have the guys who are lighting it up like they usually do. So we'll see. We'll monitor.
We sure will. So let's stick in the SEC for one final game. And that was those Kentucky Wildcats going to the Swamp a week after Florida was the belle of the ball as they took down Utah. A lot of people really high on Anthony Richardson after week 1. And he kind of showed in that game that, you know, he's still a very young quarterback who can have tremendous highs, but can also have some lows. So Kentucky gets it done in the Swamp. Mark Stoops becomes Kentucky's all-time winningest coach, passing Bear Bryant, which is super impressive. What an unbelievable job by him in that program, where I said it on Friday when I did the preview show, but it's they now have the benefit of the doubt, and Florida is the program that needs to prove it, which is just unbelievable. I was super impressed with that team. Their offensive line was much maligned coming into the week, showed some cracks early in the game, but it really stepped up when things mattered most. And I thought that was just a physical, impressive win by the Kentucky Wildcats.
Yeah. I mean, they came out and they put it to them. I mean, it takes a lot to really, really shut down a guy coming off a performance like Anthony Richardson was, right? And he had 3 rushing touchdowns. He had made so many plays with his legs in their last game in that win. 6 carries for 4 yards. Like, they just didn't let him get going. And I think that directly translates to his extremely lackluster passing numbers: 14 of 35, 143, 0 touchdowns, 2 picks. It's just like a workman's like program, a workman's like win. It just feels like Kentucky football, like they just kind of shut up and get the job done. And it feels like that was another example of that. I still like, you know, one thing when we talked about in our SEC preview is Kentucky the second best team in the East? And I think the answer is yes, but I did express hesitation with Will Levis, and that's still there. It's not like he went out and blew the doors off of a really good defense or anything like that. 200 yards, touchdown pick, you know, nothing with his legs. You could still raise concerns, but I don't think there's need to poke a hole in anything for Kentucky right now. That was a solid win. You know, second straight one for them. They've got a couple of real winnable games before going to Ole Miss, and this is a really good team. They're up into the top 10, I believe, in the newest poll that came out. Just really impressive performance with the momentum that Florida had coming off the Utah win, to go in there and just shut them down like that, really.
Yeah, agreed. Can't say much else about that one. So let's move on to our winners and losers of the week. Brian, I'll start with you. Where do you want to go? You want to go a winner or a loser to kick us off?
Yeah, let's do winners. We'll keep it positive. And also, you know, it's a good segue because I didn't realize we were going to go right from that game into this. But I had Mark Stoops as my week two winner. So obviously, like you said, you mentioned all the stats. And the only other note that I wrote down was, take that, John Calipari. That's a great win for the program. I mean, after the disagreement, if you will, that they had nothing to do but just go out and win games. And like I said, even in just the last handful of years, I feel like the kind of the aura around Kentucky football has totally changed, where it's like it used to be a little bit of like that's just a basketball school. And I think everything Calipari said was real. It just was like 5 years too late to say it, right? Like, and so now they're not like that anymore. And it's a great job by Stoops, what he's done, passing Bear Bryant, just getting that program really, really respectable. And so he's my week two winner.
All right. I'm going to go with a coach as well, Brian. And really, this is a winner of the week, but I'd also say this is the Bill Raftery honorary onions guy of the week, because this man, Jonathan Smith at Oregon State, had onions on Saturday night. He went for it at the very end of the game, could have kicked a field goal, but instead he said, guys, we're going to go for the win here. We trust in this offense. And guess what? They got it done. Oregon State, another program just like Kentucky that was an afterthought, except they didn't have basketball either. They really didn't have anything going for them. And I think they've shown it. It's a little sad in a way that two wins over Mountain West schools is creating such excitement for me. However, I will say, I think those are two good Mountain West programs. I bet on Fresno State. We did hit the over in this game. Just going to throw that one out there. Love that all week. Could have had Fresno State with the win easily as well. A really good game, though. And Jonathan Smith going for it is what you love to see out of college football. So he is my big winner of the week, and they deserve to celebrate in Corvallis.
100%. I love that. All right, losers. Third straight coach, but somebody's got to do this. Scott Frost. Although, given the buyout numbers I'm about to drop, you could have probably said he's a winner. So they're going to pay him $15 million to leave. Scott Frost fired. Nebraska's 1-2. They lost to Georgia Southern on Saturday. He's out, it super didn't work out. So he's gone. His buyout's $15 million. October 1st, it would have been $7.5 million. So they're doubling their payout to get rid of him sooner. That's never good. So Nebraska's got another shot to make a good hire. There's some names that are dropping out there if you read on the internet that sound like they could be good hires if they're interested in going there to try to fix things in Lincoln. But really, honestly, I with more of a straight face here, surprised it didn't work out. Surprised it went so wrong so quickly. Like, okay, if you never got him to a Big Ten title, sure, but never really showed signs of improvement, like full stop. And coming from UCF where he didn't lose, that was surprising. So he is this week's loser. I think he'll be back at some point. You know, he'll figure it out and get another job coaching offense or something. But Nebraska, back to square one.
Yeah, Brian. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I was looking at his tenure at UCF today, and obviously he was there when they had that undefeated season and they proclaimed themselves national champions. Or was he? Was he?
He was. Yep.
He was. Okay. Okay. Sorry. I got confused there for a second. I thought he was, but anyway, he really was not there like that long. And his record 2 years there, 6-7, 13-0. And it's like, looking back, it seemed like such an obvious hire that, oh, this is the guy that has this program at UCF rolling. But I think it does merit some revisitation to, you know, what was his role? How much was it just the program that he was at and what had been built a little bit, you know, before him, and the size of the school and the talent in the area? And I mean, it's just, you just look for reasons why. And he just did so many things at Nebraska that left something to be desired as far as in-game coaching, not being able to pull out these big wins. And you just kind of wonder, like, why it went wrong. And I think it deserves some closer revisitation of his tenure at UCF and really what we were seeing at UCF when he had that unbelievable year. And if it was maybe less about him and more about the school itself. Now, I will say I do feel bad for him to some extent. Like, I can't imagine if I was a football coach and I had the opportunity to go to Maryland and coach Maryland, and that was the job that I wanted my entire life, and everybody thought that I was a slam dunk hire, and it didn't work out. And it just failed. Like, I feel like he has to feel miserable, and I do feel for him in that regard, and I feel for Nebraska fans in that regard, but it was a move that had to be done. But I personally would not have done it until that buyout went down a little bit in 3 weeks.
Yeah. From a business move, financially, you could have waited, right? If it's not going to work, take another L or two and move on. But I think that's a fair point.
So I got one thing I want to add on about this whole thing.
Yeah.
With Nebraska making this move and deciding they had to get rid of him so badly, they're willing to just eat an extra 7.5 mil. I don't ever want to hear a college sports program in the Power Five, but especially in the Big Ten and the SEC, complain about not having enough money to do something. Like, the amount of money being thrown around right now is astronomical. I don't need to hear anything from any of these schools about how they don't have the funds that to do what they want to do. Nebraska just ate 7.5 million to get rid of a guy 3 weeks before it could have dropped in half. If you're doing that, like, what's going to change in those 3 weeks? What do you think is going to happen at the end of this season? I don't know what you're trying to salvage at this point. And I just, man, all these schools, like, I feel like these numbers are so big, but you still hear sometimes like, oh, they can't do this. They need donors to invest in that. They need the donor money for football stadiums. And most importantly, Brian, I'm going to get on my high horse right now. They don't have the money to pay the athletes, because they can pay the athletes what they deserve if they're able to pay Scott Frost $7.5 million for 3 weeks of not working. That was my biggest takeaway from the whole situation.
I think it's totally fair. The money is there. Like, no more. There's no conversation to be had about it. So I think you're onto it there. This might be getting ahead of myself because this is hours old news. Any candidates jump off the paper at you early on that, I mean, nobody's going to make as much sense as he did, right? So you might be digging a little bit, but anybody who's kind of performing one tier down that might make the jump?
The name I've heard a lot just on Twitter is Lance Leopold at Kansas. He has a lot of success in the past building programs, and I think that could make sense. I think somebody in that mold might make sense. Nebraska has such a strong tradition that I know they always think, like, we should get a Nebraska guy. We should go keep it in the family. But I think at this point, you hire the best coach that you can possibly get, who you think has a solid plan for building and doing things in a slightly innovative way that can make you competitive. When I look around the country, and it's crazy because Scott Frost seemed like that guy. He was doing things that were innovative seemingly at UCF. And again, like, I do think George O'Leary built a great foundation there, but he did get them over the hump. Like, I have to give him credit for that. He did something that that school never did. So it's tough. I don't have anybody that's obvious, but I do like the kind of idea of a proven winner from a lower level, whether it's G5, whether it's FCS, something along those lines, you know, could make sense. I just don't know, man. Like, it has to be somebody who is going to innovate. That's the key.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great call. And I think it's interesting, like, to think about how big of the name can be, right? Like, it's like there is some level of like the prestige question to it, where it's like, they'll probably, as programs like that often do, like, take a bigger swing than we think makes sense. Like Luke Fickell or like Matt Campbell, like, people are talking about these guys as like the next great hires. Like, would they be interested? I don't know. Like to me, I think my initial reaction would be like, that's an interesting job for one of them to take, because they're probably interested in and could get jobs that seemingly are more set up for success short and long term. But if you're Nebraska and you are paying $15 million to start this process 3 weeks early, or paying $8 million to start it early, like, to me, that does say they're like, let's go get our freaking guy. Let's go figure it out. So I'd be interested to see if you know, they can convince someone like that to take a call. All right, you're week two loser.
Yeah, week two loser for me. I'm going to go back to the SEC again. And I'm going with Spencer Rattler. They dropped their game on the road to Arkansas, 44-30. Spencer Rattler has not looked super impressive in either of these first two games against Georgia State or Arkansas. He was brought in there to elevate them, and I just haven't seen him elevate that team yet the way that they were supposed to. And this is why I was very cautious about them, because they overachieved last year, but they still had a lot of question marks, particularly with that offensive line. And so I don't think it's all on him, but it's just that offense as a whole leaves a lot to be desired. And until proven further, I cannot trust that South Carolina offense on the road against SEC caliber defenses. I'm looking to bet against them wherever I can.
I dig it. All right, let's Maryland Minute. Maryland's 2-0. We're going to do 1 minute on it. What'd you think? It was nice to see Leah kind of sling the ball around a little bit, wasn't it?
Leah Tungavailoa looked incredible in that first half. I love it. We've seen Maryland do this a lot before, kind of beating up on inferior opponents earlier in the season, but it's always, always nice to see, especially on the road. I don't care if Charlotte was playing their third string quarterback. I don't care if they had lost to William & Mary the week before. When you can go out and dominate a foe, I'm going to be happy with it. And we got a big one next week, Brian, that we're both going to be at.
We're going to be there sitting in Section 6, SMU, primetime game at home on FS1. Tanner Mordecai's good. They got a real offense. They're 2-0 coming in too. So I think cautious optimism is sort of where I'm at. It's sort of where I've been at going into the season as a whole. And this was always going to be the first big test. And got to go to the big house the week after. So let's pass this test. Get a stop against, I would say, like, the first really actually scary offense that they're playing, right? Maryland's defense is always good for a couple of nightmares. So we'll see, but 2-0 is 2-0, and it feels good.
Brian, number one play of the week. Just saw it pop a few minutes ago. The total in that Maryland-SMU game is 70 points. Get that as soon as you can and run, run, run. SMU, 48 points in their first game, 45 in their second. Maryland, 31 against Buffalo, 56 against Charlotte. Maryland has given up some big plays last week to Charlotte that they had no business giving up. I think Maryland's offense is really good. I think their defense is not so good. And I think we're just going to see points galore. It feels like one of those old Oklahoma State, Oklahoma games to me, where 70 seems high, but you're going to look back at it later and just the way these teams throw the ball, the way that what they want to do, and the way their defenses also give up big plays, that's going to be my absolute play of the week, over 70 in that game.
And you've been hot on over-under so far this season, so this is the guy to listen to. I've got a couple extra dollar bills in my pocket because you're over-unders. at North Carolina, almost hit before halftime, the must play of week one. So yeah, no, 70s, it does. It seems high anytime the over-under starts with a seven, right? But no, I feel like that's a great one. I got a couple plays early looking ahead to next week. I'm not shying away. I was in on this from the beginning of the season. I like Auburn as a home dog. Like, they have not looked good, but I think it's a trap-ish game for Penn State. I think Auburn's still a tough place to win. And I like them. I also, the total in that game's 48.5, which feels really low, but I actually like, I just, both those offenses leave a lot to be desired, which is how you get a total like that. I'm leaning under, but it's a scary number either way. And two more, I like Miami getting the points at A&M. I've been hesitant to overreact, but I think that one feels a bit overreact worthy with A&M kind of unable to do anything on the offensive side of the ball. And I'm extremely surprised to see Oregon favored. I know it's at home, but BYU's strong, coming off a big win. So I was on the wrong side of BYU Baylor, but I'm liking BYU. And I'm looking at the money line because I think Oregon bounced back with a huge win over Eastern Washington, but that's Eastern Washington. Oregon, BYU is closer to Georgia than they are to Eastern Washington. I think that. So I like BYU too.
Brian, can I ask you a question on the Penn State-Auburn game?
Yeah.
Do you think that Auburn is better or worse than Purdue?
Oh, man. I think they're better than Purdue.
They certainly have more talent.
They certainly have more talent. You can't question that at all. Yeah.
So I'm with you there too. I mean, that's what Purdue, that's the line in the Purdue game. 3.5, yeah, Penn State by 3.5. So it's going to be definitely like a kind of hold your nose and do it one. It didn't work out for me great with Iowa this past weekend. But I mean, we've both been on this from the beginning. College football going on the road to an SEC school is hard. Neither of us believe in Sean Clifford. So I'm completely with you there. The other game that's really caught my eye to start out this week is another total, and it's Fresno State USC over 69.5. I just think points are going to be flying nonstop in that game. USC's offenses look great to start the year. Fresno State was scoring on Oregon State. We hit the over on that. It was a little bit lower. It was 60.5 in that Oregon State game last night, but I like it to be close again, and I like there to be a ton of points. So give me over another high total, over 69.5 in the Fresno State USC game. So I would recommend grabbing both that one and the Maryland one early because I think they're going to fly up.
I like it. I like it. Week three's got a good slate on there. Texas A&M, Miami, BYU, Oregon. There's some worthwhile games to check out this week.
Yeah, is there anything that you're really excited for outside of that Maryland game that we're going to be going to?
If we can talk about the wins pool, I'm punting on A&M, who I got late. So what I want to see is Miami come in and like kind of flex on them a little bit. I am really excited for that game because I think I'm cautiously hesitant that Miami might be good. So we'll see. And also Pitt, Western Michigan. Western Michigan beat Pitt at Heinz Field last year when Pitt won the ACC. In the grand scheme of things, certainly not a mega meaningful game, but we'll be interested to see if they could put two wins together against the ACC school. Be big for a MAC program.
I got a couple for you. I'm really interested in Texas Tech going to Raleigh to face NC State. Ooh. We saw NC State struggle against ECU in week one. Texas Tech has looked better, I think, than anticipated so far under Joey McGuire, getting that win against Houston last week. I think this is a really big game, kind of a measuring stick game for both teams to know where each of them stand. And then another one I'm interested in is Michigan State going to Seattle to play Washington. We don't know a ton about Washington other than they destroyed Kent State in week one, but they definitely seem to be clearly better than they were last year under Jimmy Lake with Kalen DeBoer at the helm. Michael Penix has looked decent so far at quarterback, and I feel like we still don't know a ton about Michigan State either. having played a bunch of MAC schools. So I am I'm looking forward to that one. I think another game that can tell us, like, where do these teams stand in the grand scheme of things.
I love that. That's a primetime game too, the Herb Street game. Yeah. So that'll be a fun one. I love it. It should be a good week ahead for sure.
Well, that's our show. Another great week of college football. We hope we have another great one next week. I will talk to you later this week before week 3, everybody. Until next time, keep the grill hot and the cooler cold.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.